people, it's Today FM's Claire Beck here. Before you start your podcast, let me ask you this. Are you wearing your SPF today? I know, Irish weather can be a bit all over the place, but it really doesn't mean you should skip it. Simple's new SPF 50 UV fluid has your back, whether it's sunny, cloudy, or raining cats and dogs. This isn't just any SPF, it's skincare that works double duty. Not only does it protect your skin from UV damage, but it also helps reverse visible signs of sun damage and aging. Think brighter skin, fewer dark spots, and that stunning glowy look we're all after. And the best part? It's super lightweight, so no greasy feeling, no heavy residue, and it even has an invisible finish. So, whether you're out in the sun or dancing in the rain at your favourite festival, Simple SPF 50 UV fluid protects that summer feeling, whatever the weather. And it's available nationwide. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
So were you watching the football on the television last night? Did you see Manchester United beaten in the Carabao Cup by Grimsby Town of the fourth division in English football, Division 2, on penalties after a 2-2 draw, which could have been a 3-0 win for Grimsby had they not had a good goal disallowed. But then it could have been a win for Manchester United if Sesko had taken a very late chance. Miguel Delaney, chief football writer with The Independent. It was terrific drama last night. Edge of the seat stuff. And that's where Ruben Amorim was during the penalty shootout. On the edge of the seat in the dugout. I know there are managers who prefer not to watch penalty shootouts. But given the circumstances Manchester United were in last night, was it appropriate that he looked so nervous and indeed cowardly?
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, look, as long as you're winning games, you can do and say pretty much anything in a football context. But if you're not, everything's going to be amplified. And with Amorim, so say he was still in his pomp at Sporting and doing this in a European quarterfinal, people would think it was part of his genius. But it's the very opposite of that. And I suppose, and that does add another element to this, in that, let's be fair, it is something that looks a little bit alien. I don't want to say it looks performative, because if it's something that if someone's comfortable with, and you know, like people in Portugal have said, it's something he's done before, so it's not like he was putting it on or anything like that. But it is alien, maybe, to kind of English football culture. It's not something we've seen too often. And again, if he was winning, that wouldn't be an issue. The fact he's losing, and not just losing, but getting knocked out by a fourth-tier team after having to scramble to rescue kind of a 2-0 deficit in the first place. And like, it was the other big image of the night, which was this one that's been kind of relentlessly memed, as I believe the verb is, on social media, of him when he was looking at his tactics board, which you see has been made into everything from, like, you know, playing the game operation to filling in a sticker album. And it's just, it should come down to more than this. But it all adds this element of kind of farce and absurdity to what is already a humiliating defeat. And this thing, maybe in other circumstances, you could write it off as just one of those things that happens, although it's the first time in Manchester United's history they've ever lost to a fourth-tier team in an official competition. But of course, first of all, he's actually played quite a strong team. And secondly, there's all this kind of now noise around it, a noise that he's contributed to after the game, because, you know, like, the nature of his post-game press conferences obviously left a lot of people wondering whether he might actually resign over the international break.
Well, indeed, there's a few things out of that, Miguel. I mean, you talk about, you know, the English culture, but I would have thought it was just a management culture to face up with your players to adversity and when there is a test of character involved in a penalty shootout. And also his comments afterwards about the penalty shootout didn't matter, that it was all down to the performance during the game and that Grimsby deserved it. And would he be taking that approach into every penalty shootout? If Manchester United had gone to a penalty shootout with Tottenham in the Europa League final last year, would he have said that that penalty shootout didn't matter?
Well, I wonder, is this another case where he's kind of, he's such a kind of an on-pitch coach that he almost sees penalties as separate to the game, that so he would actually see them as a lottery in that sense, even though we consider the sport maybe past that point, given all the focus on psychology and practice and all that. But it's still separate to someone who is so kind of on the grass in terms of how you set up a team, the processes you go through. And of course, this is really the major issue with it, with Amorim. He's so invested on that side of it that, of course, he's become dogmatic about a certain tactical approach.
And sorry, Miguel, that's also what struck me about, you know, the memes going around with the tactics board. What the hell does he need a tactics board for? He plays the same system all the time, no matter what the circumstances. Maybe you replace a bead of one player with a bead of another, but he's not actually going to start moving them around on this magnetic board, is he?
Well, this is it. But I suppose maybe he would see it as kind of, and where the coaches would talk about, it's what really kind of makes systems to define details in, you know, in between every position and all that. But yeah, still, it's like still he can't get away from the fact that regardless of what he puts in or what he does with the team, it's still in this broad overall shape that right now doesn't seem to fit Manchester United. And actually, I've been talking to people obviously since the game happened, and at one point that was made to me, which is actually quite striking. So we knew United had kind of PSR issues going into this summer. They could only spend a certain amount of money without sales. They found sales difficult. So what have they spent the money mostly on to so far? There's obviously been Sesko, who was an expensive striker, one untried at Premier League level. And this in a situation where we had thought they would want guaranteed goals. Now, to be fair, related to those guaranteed goals, they've gone for two attackers in Cunha and in Mbeumo. But as has been pointed out to me now, they've obviously got this gap in midfield where they're kind of using the same players and are suited to Amorim's system. And they've now got pretty much four players that could play at number 10 because they already had Bruno Fernandes and Mason Mount there. And now it's Cunha and Mbeumo who go in those two exact positions just off the striker, meaning Fernandes and Mount have been forced back. And, okay, people might say Fernandes and Mount, maybe they're not what he's wanted in this system, that they could do a change. But now suddenly when you've got abundance of players that can play in just two positions, and they're obviously crying out for positions in midfield, it does speak to kind of something curious, at least, about the decision-making process, about how disconnected it is. Because now we know, of course, that like, they've already been so keen on Belieber at Brighton. They see him as perfect for what they want. Yet he'd cost $120 million. And suddenly you're getting into kind of hundreds of millions spent for one coach at a point now where, because he's so wedded to a specific style, if the worst was eventually to come to the worst, and he was to go, then maybe you're left with more players just kind of anchored to another coach, and it's the same problem again. And I think, to be honest, I did a piece in this in The Independent today, and it does feel like another example of how, despite, you know, the Jim Ratcliffe's ownership and how things at United are supposed to be so changed, they've gone about things almost the wrong way again. Because the way almost any modern club works now is basically they get a proper kind of sporting executive in. They pick an ideology that the club will play and they make absolutely every decision from that. They pick coaches that are going to fit into that ideology. They pick players that can fit into that ideology. So it does mean that the identity of the coach, while important, it's not absolutely crucial and there's less pressure on the coach. And of course, Liverpool went down exactly this route once Klopp had gone. Whereas with United, rather than do that, they've decided on the ideology of one specific coach, and it's a very specific ideology, which just feels like it's almost kind of replaying the same old problems they've had for the last decade in a new way.
Well, Miguel, there's one other point in relation to that. If he was to go over the international break, the transfer window closes on Monday, and you've got a whole load of players who he's bombed out, who they're struggling to sell. They might get Garnacho off to Chelsea, and the others, Jadon Sancho, might fight some move to Europe. They've already offloaded Marcus Rashford on loan. There's talk of Kobi Mainoo going out as well. I mean, 2 years ago, he was the big new thing. And also, a lot of Manchester United fans are pointing out, well, suddenly, where are the homegrown players? They're getting bombed out. So could it be that they could end up him walking away or firing him after he has made a complete mess of the squad for whoever is coming in afterwards?
And there is a fair discussion, of course, about how, as they've been trying to sell players, his abrupt treatment of some of them and also public talk about some of them has actually lessened their value. I mean, I think given some of the prices gone around this window and what I'd heard at the start of the window, they would have reasonably expected 70 million, say, for Garnacho. yeah, it looks like he's going to go to Chelsea for around 35 to 40 million. Although they are struggling to sell in other areas. And he do, like, if he were to go, and I'm not saying that's going to happen, it does feel like it's going to persist. But if he were to go, then suddenly this inability to sell or this struggle to sell might end up serving them, because suddenly they've got those players there for potentially a new manager. And this is the other thing about, I find a little bit confusing with the situation. And like broadly, I think Amorim, I mean, like what he did at Sporting was genuinely brilliant. The people will rightly say it's the Portuguese league, which is a lesser level. But that was a club that was like, that was a drift. I mean, the old big three in Portugal were becoming the big two in Benfica and Porto. And he got them back up to that level. Liverpool actually really liked Amorim as well. But, and this is indicative of Manchester United, Liverpool felt that when it didn't quite come down to a choice between Slot and Amorim, but they did feel that if they were to go for Amorim, they would have said they'd have to spend 500 million really to get the squad re-engineered so it fits what he wants. Whereas Slot didn't necessarily warrant that.
I don't know. Slot has spent more or less that amount of money anyway, hasn't he?
Although that's after winning the league title, to be
true.
Fair to him.
Okay, listen, I have to leave it there with you. Miguel Delaney, chief football writer of The Independent. Thank you.
The last word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Hello, it's Today FM's Claire Beck here. Before you start your podcast, let me ask you this. Are you wearing your SPF today? I know, Irish weather can be a bit all over the place, but it really doesn't mean you should skip it. Simple's new SPF 50 UV fluid has your back, whether it's sunny, cloudy, or raining cats and dogs. This isn't just any SPF. It's skincare that works double duty. Not only does it protect your skin from UV damage, but it also helps reverse visible signs of sun damage and aging. Think brighter skin, fewer dark spots, and that stunning glowy look we're all after. And the best part? It's super lightweight, so no greasy feeling, no heavy residue, and it even has an invisible finish. So, whether you're out in the sun or dancing in the rain at your favourite festival, Simple SPF 50 UV fluid protects that summer feeling, whatever the weather. And it's available nationwide. Now, enjoy your podcast.